Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
/7:55 is real with David O'Brien and Eric O'Flaherty is on the air now.
Hello, welcome back into the latest edition of 7:55 is real. Producer Cam here with you. I'll hand off the reins to David and Eric in just one moment as they answered your questions in real time on the Athletic app in the 7:55 is real live room. Brilliant Braves questions, as always, from you guys. It's starting to become an expectation that you guys bring it, and you have yet not to bring it. Subscriber Marcus joined the live room for the first time. He was able to ask his question, though his internet connection was interrupted midway through, and we clowned him for it, but he was able to rejoin and finish his query. If you want to be like Marcus, sans the internet connection problem, and ask your question to David and Eric and join us in the live room, make sure to subscribe to us on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, wherever you get the podcast. In addition, make sure to follow David and Eric on Twitter at DOBrianATL and at EOF34. Questions today included Spencer Strider. Is there concern looming over him when it relates to his innings count? Will the coaching staff kind of pull back, reserve him some, or will they choose a different avenue, a different approach? Also, are we surprised by this win streak? David and Eric share their insights into that after Brian Snicker called that now well-documented team meeting. And also, the Braves farm system, what is its complexion like after Michael Harris? David shares his thoughts on the Braves prospect talent level and if we could see anyone else soon from the farm system. As always, thank you all for supporting the show. It means so much to us that you guys attend these live rooms and also support us on all the other platforms where you get the podcast. It means a lot to us. You keep the show rolling. And without further ado, here's David and Eric.
All right, let's kick it off. Mark F., what do you got?
Hey, love the article this morning, Dave. Just wanted to ask a bullpen question. You mentioned a lot about camaraderie there and how tight-knit they are. How do you think that stacks up against other teams? Like, do you think the only 5 of the 30 teams are, like, tight-knit like that? Like, is it 15? Like, just I only follow the Braves, so I only know, you know, what the Braves are like. So do you think that's a really rare thing to have that camaraderie? Thanks.
Well, you know what? That's a great question for Eric, actually. He's close enough, I think, to be able to compare what the Braves have to other teams. I mean, just from watching it, I know that they're very close and that they have gone out of their way to make sure that everybody they bring in fits into that, you know, that fun, easygoing camaraderie that they have, and that they don't have any assholes in there who are wound tight and just in it for themselves, that kind of thing. But as for how many other teams really do a lot of vetting and put a lot of emphasis on that, I can't really say for sure. Eric, do you got a better feel for that?
It's just case by case. You know, I mean, some teams, yeah. I think the best way, you know, I don't really pay enough attention to other teams and how their bullpens are performing outside of when they play the Braves. But a good way to look at it, if you ever want to kind of do some studying yourself, is just to see how the newcomers do, you know, guys getting called up from the minor leagues, how they do, guys coming over in trades, how they're doing year over year with kind of some of the same guys, or even if they're bringing guys back that you may not feel like they need, you know, that always tells me that the team knows the importance of that individual. And I can say that I never did well in a bullpen that I felt like that didn't feel like a unit, you know, that I didn't feel like we were all in it together. Teams that have guys that are just punching the clock, it's real easy to just wind up punching the clock yourself. And if you're not pitching well, it's even harder to take that leadership role. But yeah, if you want to look at a team, you know, just look at a team and see how all the new guys are doing, or the guys that have struggled in other organizations. And if they're doing well in one, that usually says something pretty good about the chemistry as a whole.
Yeah, and now that you mention that, the Braves have brought back some guys like Webb and O'Day And when they came back, they go out of their way to say how happy they are to come back here, because it tells me that it is better than it is in some other places, because they wanted to come back here. And they were so comfortable here. I mean, Webb was thrilled. He got DFA'd again today before he actually pitched in the game, but that he'll be sent to AAA, I'm sure, if he clears waivers. But he was thrilled to come back after being out in Arizona. I'm not saying Arizona's situation's bad, but he was really happy to come back. Obviously, Arizona's not winning. But O'Day went to the Yankees. He's been to the Pirates. He's been to some other teams. And he loves pitching on this team. I mean, it's his second stint here. And, you know, like talking to a guy like Colin McHugh, who's been on several teams, he really is impressed with this group and, you know, and these guys. And everybody you talk to says the same things about how tight-knit they are and how much fun they have together, and the fact that they go out to eat on the road, you know, to dinner together, the relievers do, and, you know, do stuff together. And that just tells me a lot about how much they actually like each other and pull for each other.
Yeah, and you can read into the comments a little bit, because nobody's going to come to a team and say, oh, it's, you know, I don't really like these guys. Yeah. But you will see them, you know, kind of, oh, yeah, it's a good group of guys, you know, and leave it at that. Or they'll expand on it and talk about how happy they are and thrilled to be a part of a group. You know, just the more guys are talking about that unit, that'll usually tell you what you need to know.
Right. And they can just talk about the talent, you know, and they don't. They go out of the way to talk about the personalities without even being asked about it, really.
Right. Thanks, Mark. Christopher D.
Hey, guys, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I saw it come up and I was like, all right, I'm like, just got to make sure I'm not on mute. So not sure how much you've heard, but Dave, I'm sure you probably heard. Matt.
Is Christopher going to talk? I can't hear anything.
Uh-oh.
He's talking. I hear him.
Just kidding.
Oh, you got his ass.
Thanks, Dave. Not sure how much you guys have heard the back and forth between WFAN, the overnight guy on WFAN, and Matt and Chuck in the afternoon drive, but it seems that ever since New York media said, oh, the division's over, Atlanta's ripped off 14 straight wins, and the guy doubled down yesterday, I guess, on his overnight after getting clowned on afternoon drive. Does any of that ever, like, filter into the clubhouse? Like, they hear that and be like, all right.
I mean, I'm a member of the media, and I haven't even heard any of it. So I doubt – I can say I'm sure that I doubt any of the players have heard any of it, but no.
Guys tune most of that out. You know, I mean, the only thing that ever kind of gets going in the clubhouse is if a guy on another team's talking shit.
Right.
You know, or saying something about one of your guys in the paper. Then, you know, that might fire some guys up and they'll pay attention to. But, don't pay attention to what's being said in the media about your team unless it's one of those screaming guys on ESPN and it happens to be on the clubhouse. Then guys will just tell them to shut up or, like, can you believe this guy? And then they'll go out and they'll do their workout. It's not that big a deal to guys inside the clubhouse what's being said outside it.
Yeah, I could see if you had a local guy that was really – you know, ragging on him every day, that kind of thing, a prominent columnist locally or something like that. But, I mean, a radio station in New York, come on. They're not going to hear that shit.
Yeah, and if it's a local guy and he's writing a bunch of negative stuff and ragging on players, and then he's coming up and asking for interviews and favors too,
right?
You know, they'll be aware of that and kind of tell him to screw off. But
right, because their wives and girlfriends or parents or kids or whoever can see that stuff. But if it's just a – radio guy popping off in New York, I mean, who cares, you know?
You can't keep track of it all.
Yep.
And it's radio.
Fair. I said, the other thing is, are you at all surprised that they've ripped off 14 straight ever since Snit finally called that meeting and just kind of let the guys?
I'm not surprised that they've played well enough to go on a great run because they've played inferior teams. I am surprised that they've ripped off 14 in a row because that's really hard to do. Those teams, some of those teams they beat, they're all bad, pretty bad teams or pretty mediocre teams. The Pirates aren't that bad, actually. They're not like bottom two in the league. But each, like Oakland and Pittsburgh, each had a really good pitcher that went up against the Braves. So you always can run up against a bad team that has a good pitcher that day. And it doesn't really matter if a pitcher's on and dealing for six, seven innings. You just expected the Braves to either – run up against that and or have one of their own guys really shit the bed and leave in like the third inning, you know? And that hasn't happened. Yeah, every starter just about, I mean, a bad start for them during this run has been like five innings and four runs. You know, that's really bad for the Braves during this run. They've been getting really good starts. And that's pretty hard to do over a span of 14 games to not really have one guy get knocked out in the second or third inning or give up seven runs. And, you know, they have such a deep bullpen that can get that starters out of there in the third, fourth inning if they have
yes.
to and not be devastated by it.
Yeah, I mean, you could play the Savannah Bananas 14 in a row and you might lose one.
Yeah.
I mean, you play anybody in baseball. It's just hard to – baseball is that – you know, it's not like football or basketball where the better team wins most of the time.
Right.
It's – you know, what it takes one guy, a bullpen guy can come in and give up a five spot in a hurry. Your starter can have trouble finding the strike zone and kind of create a mess, or the bats can just be cold that day.
Right.
I see a lot of people trying to downplay 14 in a row, but for me, I don't care who you're playing. 14 in a row is a big deal.
I mean, just keep in mind that Pirates team is 5-1 against the Dodgers this year. They swept them in Dodger Stadium.
Yep.
So. And sweeping four in Colorado, that will always shock me because that just doesn't happen. That does not happen. Teams do not go into Colorado and sweep four from the Rockies. So that
you go in there hoping to split and get out.
The surprising part to me of all of it was that four-game sweep in Colorado. When they did that, it was like, something special could be happening now.
Yeah, I agree. Thanks, Christopher.
Thanks, guys.
Devang, is that how you say it? Devang R?
Yeah, that's right. Thank you, guys.
Nailed it.
How you doing? I'm good. You guys do great work. Appreciate your content. quick question is, if Soroka gets hurt again, would he be considered a bust?
No.
No way. No. You can't consider somebody a bust because they had a freak injury, you know, onto the Achilles. I mean, there might be something predisposed in his Achilles that just wasn't structurally sound for the way he pitched. I mean, or it could have just been a freaky thing where he did, you know, did it the first time on a freak movement, like kind of like Ozzie breaking his foot on something that you never see a guy break his foot on. And then his body rejected the sutures, which is another really weird thing. But no, I mean, he can't be considered a bust because when he's pitched, he's been phenomenal. So
yeah.
If he's pitching to a 5 ERA, that's when you consider a guy bust that we thought was going to be really good. But he pitched great until he got hurt. So, no, I can't consider somebody a bust because of injuries at all. Never.
Yeah, I just worry that – I hope he doesn't go down the line of, like, Syndergaard, where all that potential but just couldn't stay healthy enough on the mound for us and just really show that potential, you know?
I think the difference is – Syndergaard keeps getting injuries, and a lot of it's from trying to throw 110 miles an hour all the time. Soroka is a pitcher's pitcher, smart as hell, has a great mix, doesn't try to overpower guys, and he was just going about doing a normal routine play and doing what he's supposed to do, which is hustle over to cover first, and he got hurt. So I think there's a big difference between the two. And, you know, if he was hurting his elbow or shoulder from, you know, that'd be different to me, I guess. But, yeah, I got nothing but respect for what Soroka's done. And I think he's gotten the most out of his talent when he's healthy. And, you know, after talking to him, after having him on the podcast and him explaining everything he's done to get back, I don't doubt it like I did before. I really doubted whether he could get back. I think he might be able to do it, man. And you know what? The guy that he mentioned talking to, with the White Sox, the only guy that's come, Jake Berger, who's come back from two Achilles. He tore his like 3 months apart. He's the only guy we know of that's torn it twice. I don't know if you've noticed, but that guy's raking right now. So that's got to really help Soroka. That guy's been on a run lately. If you look it up, he's been their best hitter in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And he's a big guy. I'm looking at him, probably weighs 220, 230, and he's running. He's sprinting on that thing. So I don't know. That gives me even more hope that for Soroka, watching that guy come back from what he did, you know, tearing it 3 months apart.
Gotcha. Yep. I agree with what Dave said. That's pretty much sums it up. Thanks, Devang. All right. Christopher P.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good. What's up, man?
Got a quick question for you guys. Obviously, you know, with the timing of the 14-game win streak and how well Arcia's played over the last couple of days, probably not going to make any major moves. It wouldn't make much sense, especially with Ozzie coming back. But do you guys see them maybe going after a infield left-hander, someone pretty cheap, like maybe like a Tony Kemp or Ruben Odor, another kind of left-handed option, especially since now the lineup is super right-handed dominant?
Well, no, because Ruben Odor is going to cost you talent in return. And you're not going to give up young talent or good players in order to get a player who has no place to play right now. Because Arcia is getting the chance to play, and so far he has done nothing but show you that he's not only ready to keep the seat warm, he's ready to thrive there. People forget that this guy was a good player in Milwaukee for a couple of years. He was an everyday shortstop and a good player, had some really big hits, a couple in the postseason for them. So if he falls on his face in the next 3 or 4 weeks, yeah, I see Alex going out and getting somebody for sure. Alex will not let that be a detriment to the team. That will not let that be a weakness that brings him down. He will go out and get somebody if necessary, but he's not going to do it just to go get a guy because Ozzie got hurt. Not when they've got a guy that so far has surpassed what they hoped you could do in it. And obviously the defense, you saw the defense. He's got a better arm than Ozzie, and he's got range because he's a shortstop. So I would.
And that play he made coming around, he bobbled that ball.
Yeah.
And got the runner at second.
That was impressive, man. He stayed with it.
That was cool.
That's heads up.
That's a vet play.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
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 Thanks, Christopher.
Yeah, I think you'd have to fall on your face to really make them see a need to go out and do that, you know, between now and the trade deadline.
I think he'd have to be real, real bad because he's just here to hold down the fort, and he's doing great.
Eric, let's hear from today's sponsors.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Brandon O.
Hey, how's it going, guys? Hey, you know, what's made the Braves so fun is all the young guys they brought up that have contributed. You know, this team's basically been built through the minors, which is great. But we're seeing, you know, all the ARB contracts are coming up. And I know everyone wants to talk about Dansby, but I know Fried is coming up in 2 years and you're going to have to pay Riley and, you know, eventually Soroka and all that. Is there any chance that all these guys can get signed or are they going to have to pick and choose? I mean, Fried's probably going to cost like 28, 30 million probably.
Yeah.
I think they can do for the future.
Well,
you start throwing some of those Aussie deals out there and see if they take them.
Exactly. You got to do that when they're real young. This happens with every team. I mean, it's a good problem to have. This is what inevitably happens when you're a good team. I mean, look at the Chicago Cubs, man. They print money here, and they didn't keep any of those three guys that were foundational guys. So I don't see the Braves doing that at all. So far, the Braves said they were going to raise the payroll each year. They've been doing that. and they've got money coming in like crazy with their attendance, you know, since the since getting hot last year. Finished second in the majors in home attendance last year. They're going to finish top three this year probably. You know, they're raking in dough at the Battery. I'm not saying they're going to sign all those guys because they can't. I mean, like you said, Freed's going to get between $20 and $30 million a year in a long-term deal. Austin Riley, they need to get signed early, like you indicate, like Eric said, one of those deals where you buy out a couple of arbitration years and free agent, because if you wait till he gets, I mean, keeps hitting 30 homers a year, this guy's going to be his price is going up exponentially. Dansby's already has, unfortunately for the Braves. You know, if he had hit like this last year, I would have seen them definitely trying to do it in the offseason. But now it's going to be curious to see what they can do, because he's up against free agency now. And if you're Dansby, you already bet on yourself, you know, and now you're going to go to free agency unless the Braves blow you away with an offer. You got this far. You took the risk. So I don't know. I know that Atlanta's where he wants to be. And I know we said that about Freddie too. And that Freddie did want to be in Atlanta, regardless of what some people think out there, Freddie did. Dansby, though, is a homegrown guy. He's got a lot of roots here with his companies and all this. His whole thing is Atlanta. You know, it says it right in his slogans, for his company and all that. And I know he wants to stay here. But if another team offers $5, $10 million a year more than the Braves offer, we'll have to wait and see. But Austin Riley, I see them definitely making a move to sign him long term. That's a guy you do not let get away. And then they'll have their second baseman. I definitely see them. They should, if they're smart, and I know they are, they will sign Michael Harris after this year.
I'd sign him right now.
Save a lot of money, sign him to a 10-year deal like they did Acuna.
Yep, I agree.
But they're not going to be able to sign all those guys, just because to do that, you'd have to have a payroll around $250 million, and they're not going to go that high, I don't think. I think they'll go close to $200 in a couple of years, maybe, with the attendance being what it is. They should, with the revenues they're getting, they should. But there's only a couple of teams operating in that top stratosphere, the teams that have these ridiculous TV deals, like the Dodgers. That TV deal of theirs, they can spend $300 million on a payroll and still make oodles of cash because of that TV deal they have.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Thanks, Brandon. Dylan K. What's up, Dylan?
Hey, good afternoon, guys. Hey, you guys might have already answered this question on a previous Q&A here, so I apologize. You guys already been asked this, but you know, Strider's pitching out of his mind right now, and he's obviously fitting into the starting rotation. Just curious, you know, he's past that 100 pitch limit now, you know, whatever that fake limit or, you know, they put on starting pitchers these days. But I mean, an innings limit, is that something we should be concerned about? Like where, you know, we get into July and August where now they're starting to look at, hey, maybe we should pull this guy back. And obviously Soroka coming back may help that a little bit, but just curious if you guys have some thoughts there.
Yeah, we answered that one. Next, John, just kidding. No, that's going to be a legitimate concern because some of these things are arbitrary, and I think teams go a little overboard with these rules, and the Braves will not do that, thankfully. Alex said that last year when they had guys like Max Fried, who had pitched a career high the year before, you know, and coming off he said it this spring, coming off the World Series and all that, pitching in November. They said they're going to do a case-by-case basis, talk to the guys, see how they feel. They're not just going to put down like they did, like the Nationals did that year with Strasburg. And, that was stupid. The Braves aren't going to do that. But it's a legitimate thing with if you look at his career, you know, he
threw 94 last year.
Yeah, he's just not pitched much because he had Tommy John 3 years ago, so he missed, you know, off of college, a college season, and then coming in they had the shortened season and all that, so he just hasn't pitched 150 innings in a year. So we'll see where it goes, but it's going to be, I think, like you mentioned, Soroka's going to have something to do with that. I think because if Soroka comes back in August after the All-Star break, and he shows that he can pitch at a high level and be a really strong back of the rotation starter, well, then you are going to have six guys and you're not going to need six. to me, as great as Strider looked last night, and it sounds almost ludicrous coming off that start last night to even suggest taking him out of the rotation. But if the innings thing becomes a deal where you are concerned about him, you know, doubling his career high or getting close to that, you certainly could have worse options than to stick him back in the bullpen as a 2-3 inning guy like he was doing, because I think he can impact games in a huge way either way.
Exactly.
And if you have Soroka as a really good back of the rotation starter, you don't need six, because you don't want to skip Max Fried and have him taking an extra day of rest all the way the rest of the season, or Kyle Wright. What do you think, Eric?
Yeah, I mean, I think you could kind of – you got to watch him throw, you know.
Yeah.
If he's starting to look tired or his performance falls off. But if he's throwing the way he's been throwing, I'm trying to find a way to keep him throwing as many innings as possible for as long as possible. Soroka comes back and he's dealing, and Strider falls off a little bit performance-wise. You want to shift him into that bullpen role. I'd be up for that too, but for right now, I mean, he's so valuable doing what he's doing. And what impresses me the most about him is, I know he throws 100 miles an hour, but it's all legs. You know, it doesn't look like a stressful delivery. He's able to locate that fastball up in the zone. And when you watch his innings, he strikes a lot of guys out, but he has like a 12, 13 pitch inning. It's not like he's walking two and striking out three and having a ton of stressful innings. So, I mean, for me, I like the case-by-case approach and just seeing how he's throwing the ball when September rolls around, because he'll be, you know, I think at this point, no matter how they use him, he's going to be at a career high, even counting minor leagues. He threw 94 last year. He's going to surpass that pretty easily this year. And then you just see how he's throwing the ball in September and see how the rest of the guys are doing. But if I can have him throwing like that for me in the playoffs as a number three or four, that's hard to turn down.
Yeah, man, he was hitting 100 last night, like 70 pitches in.
No, he's not even trying. I mean, that's just what he throws. It's like there's some guys, you watch him throw 98 in the first and second inning, you can tell they're humping up. And there's other guys that, like, when he hits the fastball button on a video game, it's 98 every time. And that's how he throws. So
he is easy cheese, man. He is the definition of it.
Yeah,
he's impressive. That was impressive last night. And you're right. Yeah. He doesn't get deep. He doesn't have these 10 pitch at bats because he puts guys away when he gets two strikes on him.
It's because he can locate that high fastball. You know, most of the guys you've seen, starters the last 10 years that threw 97 to 99, they were taught to throw the ball down in the zone. But he's hitting the glove up in the zone, which is kind of a new trend in baseball the last 5 years. But if you could throw a fastball and hit the top of the zone and the glove and get the called strike and force hitters to swing at it, I mean, they cannot catch up to that pitch consistently. So, that's why he's having so many quick innings.
What's he got? Have you got the thing in front? What's he got, like 45 innings right now, something like that?
44, I think it says. So
44.
Halfway through last year.
We're over a third of the way into the season. I don't see any problem with him going 150 innings after going almost 100 last year.
Guys do that in pro ball. You know, you get into the minor leagues and you start and they put a limit on it, but guys have seasons where they throw 100, 150, and he could do that this year without having to take time off.
As healthy as he is, man, and his way he takes care of his body, I mean, he does – this guy is smart as hell as far as taking care of his body and does all the research. And part of the reason he became a vegan, other than – I mean, he's got he rattled off like five reasons he became a vegan, but one of them was – like Josh said a few years ago when he said he did it because of inflammation, to avoid inflammation. This guy's the same way. Strider talked about how he didn't want to have inflammation when he's coming back from Tommy John surgery, and he didn't like the way he felt. So when he went to the vegan diet, he immediately noticed a change with that. So he's found something that works for him, and I don't think he has like the typical soreness and stuff after he throws. I mean, he's young, he's strong, he lives clean, he's got this great diet that he's following. So, yeah.
And that's what's so hard, Dave, about, you know, trying to put these limits on guys and grade guys is it's still relatively a small period of or a short period of data to get on guys that are taking extreme care of themselves. You know, when I came into the game, the whole team was in the sauna after the game drinking beers, and then we'd have ice cream. You know, and that was just 15 years ago. So when you're trying to count how many innings a guy can throw and stay healthy and be durable, I mean, how many 99-mile-per-hour throwing vegans do you have to study?
Yeah. Something tells me if you compare, you know, lifestyles, diets, approach to pitching, all that, this guy is not Syndergaard. You know, they're entirely different beings. So,
yep.
And Max Fried, same way, takes care of himself, knows exactly what he needs to do, has really studied his delivery, his diet, his workouts. Soroka, we heard Soroka, if you heard the podcast, how impressive he was talking about his workout routine and lifting, how he's learned not to get overly muscled. And these guys are all like that. The Braves have got three young pitchers, or four, including Kyle Wright, who all go about it the right way and aren't trying to just be macho and blow people away, and have really studied what they need to do to stay healthy and pitch for a long time.
Yeah, so it's pretty hard to predict, but that's why for me you watch how he's throwing the ball and make the decision when it comes up. All right, Marcus C. What do you got, Marcus?
Hey, guys.
What's up?
Love listening and look forward to each podcast, man. So thanks for doing this. This is also my first time listening because school's over. Don't have to teach for a while.
Nice.
My question's about my favorite Brave, which is Dansby. For years, I've supported him.
Okay. Is that what? It? Just keep supporting him, Marcus.
What was his question?
I think he's gone. All right. Thanks for coming, Marcus.
Yeah, I support Dansby too.
KCM. I'm going to keep supporting Dansby too, Marcus.
If he keeps OPS and what he's doing the last month, I'm going to support him too.
Yeah, I think I'll stick with Dansby. I wanted to ask you guys, how are we looking from a farm strength perspective? You know, I think it kind of surprised all of us when Harris leapfrogged Waters there. So also seems like every notable pitcher we've had past few years is either on the big team or dealt away. Are we just thin across the board now? What are you seeing there, Dave?
Well, they've got a lot. When you have the youngest player in the majors starting for you, and you have – if you look at a lot of teams right now would have Strider and Harris as their top two prospects, and the Braves have them helping a team that won the World Series last year. So it's kind of unusual in that they have relied so much, and this has been a trend for them. You remember a few years ago they had at one time, they had I think three of the four youngest players in baseball, including the two youngest – when Soroka and Acuna were up. They were the two young players in baseball. So the Braves are bringing these guys up faster than they used to. And in some organizations, they'd be buried behind guys. So like Harris, I didn't expect for Harris to be up until the second half. You know, we didn't expect for what was going to happen. And Duvall to tire, which probably should have. But, you know, to struggle so much hitting while he's playing center field. But to answer your question, I don't know that they're that thin, but they're not stacked like they were. But that goes with winning four division titles. You're not picking at the top anymore. So
yeah,
the teams that are loaded generally, now there are some good teams that also are high in the prospect rankings, but the Braves after winning four straight division titles in the World Series, you know, they're not picking very high. And
sure.
And they have some of the guys, like I said, that would be top five prospects on a lot of teams are actually helping them right now. So, but I
what look about,
at guys like, I look at a guy like Grissom. I think he's a stud. They don't have a lot of top heavy guys, like an obvious guy, like a Harris or a Acuna, that's going to be ready to come up, and like Soroka, you know, or Ian Anderson when he came up, or Max Fried. They don't have those guys right now to answer your question that are ready to the next obvious guy. But Harris kind of made a huge jump, you know, from off the top 100 radars to starting in center field in a span of 1 year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about Waters? I feel like he had a good first week, then went down with a hamstring thing, and I haven't heard anything since then.
You know, we've talked about Waters. I unfortunately, there are certain guys that get followings because of, you know, the whole thing. He's from Georgia, local kid, good personality, exciting player, tons of tools. people like guys like that. They want to follow. They want to see him do well. They want to see him be the next Acuña.
Yeah.
But the simple fact of the matter is he struggled mightily last year in AAA. I know that a lot of people wanted to overlook the fact that he struck out every three at-bats, but that's a red flag for the organization. And he wasn't going to come up till he lowers the strikeout rate, improves the contact rate. And his numbers just weren't very good last year. And what he did power-wise was in spurts. He had like three spurts last year where he hit like four homers in three games, one of them, and then he had another. Well, if you look at what he did this year, that first week you're talking about, it was about four games, and he had a great four games. Then he got hurt again.
Right.
Then he played a couple of games. Then he had another nagging injury. He's had like two or three different nagging injuries this year, not just the hamstring. If you can't stay healthy, the big club's not going to bring you up to play in the major leagues if you can't stay healthy. They got a bunch of guys on this team that play every day, especially in the infield. But they got outfielders that play every day. I mean, Acuña's just played like 13 straight games, and he's coming off a major surgery.
Yeah, thank God.
So if you can't stay healthy at AAA with the hamstrings and all the other stuff, it's not going to do much to instill confidence that you can do it up here. But bottom line, he's still striking out a ton down in AAA. I looked last night. I look at the box score a lot to see how he's doing. Just randomly, I looked last night. He had a sac fly that drove in a big run for them. But he was 0 for 3 with two more strikeouts last night. And if you look at the strikeout rate, it's not improved this year.
Gotcha. All right. Well, thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate it.
Yep. You got it, man.
Thanks, Casey.
Guys, let's take a quick break, and then we'll finish up the show.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is meme mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
Which little birdie? Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Sam A.
Hey guys, how you doing?
What's up,
Sam? What's up?
Hey, I wanted to ask you guys. I have a buddy of mine who's a great baseball mind, but he's a Phillies fan, and it's just fun. It gives us a good opportunity to see a different perspective about baseball. But we've been talking a lot this year about guys who are a little, I don't know, underappreciated by fans, especially fans of other teams. And like I look at the Braves, I see Travis d'Arnaud doesn't really get respect from other fans. And for me, the ultimate example is Nick Markakis didn't really get the love he deserves. You know, guys that aren't always making all-star teams, you don't see kids always wearing their jerseys or their shirts at the ballpark. But two
well, the
questions
funny thing
we're wondering from you guys, who some of the underappreciated type players are you've seen, you've played with or covered. And with the Cubs series coming up, who's a underappreciated player on the Cubs that we could look for this series?
You know, the funny thing about Nick is in Atlanta, he was not appreciated. At the end, I think a lot of people really finally came around to him when they heard so many stories about how big he was in the clubhouse and what a great guy he was and all that. But it can be a fickle market, and they got used to seeing guys who were always smiling and having fun, laughing on the field, and Nick was kind of the opposite of that. So he's the kind of guy that had to kind of grow on you. But in the Orioles organization, where he came up through the minor league system, he was a god in Baltimore. They loved him in Baltimore.
And then he came over to Atlanta. It took about 5 years before people really started coming around to him. So that was a head scratcher to me, because I always thought the guy, the working class blue collar player like him, was a fan favorite in most places. But Nick just couldn't seem to get a big following in Atlanta until, like I said, towards the end, a lot more people came around. But you never really saw a lot of his jerseys or anything. But they had a lot of big star type players too that were a lot more colorful and flamboyant or whatever. And he was the opposite of that. But they loved him in Baltimore. I tell you that, man. They still love him.
I think Darnot's a good example too. You know, yeah. Darnot doesn't ever seem to. You know what I think it is about Darnot? Because I was asking myself this the other day. It's like he's like the quietest great player, you know, yeah. that I've watched. And it's, I think a lot of it is your antics on the field, the things you're doing. And there's right. some guys. You know, you can see it in the clubhouse. There's guys that are just, when the media comes in, they're doing cartwheels for them. And there's other guys that just don't really have any interest in blowing up and being a big deal and selling their own jerseys. And a lot of that comes into play. You know, if you do the bat flips and you're smiling and laughing and putting on a show, it's pretty easy to sell. And if you don't want it, if you just want to do your job and lay low, you know, that's easy to do too. I think it's more a personality thing for a lot of guys. Another guy I always thought was underrated during my time in Atlanta was Martin Prado. Even though he was noticed, yep. but for me, he was an even better player than he seemed to get credit yep. for.
Yep. Yeah, those multi-position guys kind of get under the radar because they don't stand out at one thing. They're just really good at a lot of things.
Yeah.
I would have thought, you know, for a while there, Adam Duvall was that guy with Atlanta, you know. I thought, you know, we had the year, the 2020 season when he put up those big numbers. He's a guy that really doesn't draw attention to himself or anything. Darno, he doesn't do one thing on the field to draw attention to himself.
At all.
The way he dresses, the way anything. He does the chop thing because they all do it, and that's just that's a team thing. They all do it, so he does that. But that's as much as you're going to see him be demonstrative is the chop coming around third base on a home run. Otherwise, you know, or when he gets to second base. Otherwise, he doesn't do anything to draw attention to himself at all. But I tell you, he's become a real leader. He doesn't seek, you know, the reporters. But when you go up to him, he stands there and he will answer your questions about any guy, and he loves talking about his teammates. He doesn't like talking about himself, but he loves talking about his teammates and pumping them up.
Yeah, he's not going to start the Travis Darnot band anytime soon.
Right. Yeah, exactly. He and his brother were very different guys.
Yes. Thanks, but, Sam.
I don't know about a Cubs guy, man. You got me on that one because I have not seen the Cubs play much this year at all. I just know they're the name guys they've got left on the team, but I don't know a bunch of unsung guys for them at all.
I think they got a guy named Morrell that's been getting some big knocks for them.
I have heard of him. I have heard of him, but I don't know what he's done.
Yeah, it's kind of hard when teams are going through that. For me, when teams are going through that phase that they're going through where they've traded off a bunch of guys, it's hard to pay attention.
Yeah, nothing really stood out when they played in Atlanta, man. I mean, except Contreras' brother is a stud, but
yeah.
Watch out. Right. Contreras' brother's got some big power. He's a good player, man, all around catcher.
Yeah, it'd be cool to see them square off. Robert G.
Last one. I've been told it's the last one. We're up against our allotment, our time slot, and our satellite's going to run out.
Well, Robert G. All right, Marcus C. I think you were asking about Dansby earlier.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for having me back. Yeah, I was just going to say, where do you think he ranks in terms of, like, all of baseball with, like, his high baseball IQ? Because most of the things I love about him is he's not making the flashiest play. He's always just making, like, a really good right play, exactly. And, you know, his intangibles and his instincts are – mainly the reason I've always wanted to keep him in Atlanta. I'm a Texas guy, so I don't really care about the hometown thing. So that's the biggest reason I've always wanted to keep him. So where do you think he ranks in baseball as far as like baseball IQ?
You disappointed me, man. You should have. I thought you were going to cut it off mid-sentence again. That would have been awesome.
That would have been nice.
I'll tell you what. I have always respected Dansby, all the intangibles he brings. My only question was he ever going to hit consistently enough to be a guy that you build around, because the defense has always been there.
But yeah, he's hitting this year, and it doesn't look fluky at all to me. He's figured some things out, and he's done it in the past for like 2 or 3 weeks at a time, but he's doing it now for like a month, and this looks like him. And the way he's hitting with authority, driving the ball to the opposite field, he's getting stronger as he gets older, and the defense has just been extraordinary this year, man. Eric, I love that play that he makes, that sliding play on one knee. He does that one motion and pops up and throws the second. He does that better than just about anybody. You could look at a guy like Baez or Lindor. There are a couple of the guys that are really athletic like that. But Dansby makes that play so consistently. As far as his IQ, it's about as good as you're going to get. I mean, he's a really smart guy that knows the game inside and out.
Yeah. I've never questioned anything about his desire to win, his focus during the game. I mean, they can be down by 8 and he's still making the right play, laying out, trying to win, or just, you know, save his pitcher a run. And those are all the things I've admired about him since I met him. He came up very mature his first year with the Braves, and he's just, I mean, he's played his ass off ever since. I know he's been through some slumps with the bat, but his defense is, I've never seen him take a play off, and that's what I admire about him most. And I think that's another big reason why the Braves got to try to keep him, is you got to have a guy like that that's been doing it for a long time for the young guys coming up to look up to.
Yeah, I feel like, I know a lot of people want Trey Turner. I just don't feel like he brings that. So you'd be losing something on defense. You'd be getting a lot, obviously, on offense, but I feel like he just doesn't have those same instincts that win you more ball games.
And you have to pay him a lot more money than you.
Exactly, you're going to have to pay him double.
Yeah, one more thing. I'm sorry.
I think Dansby, I like, and one thing about Dansby is there's a lot of players who will say, I only care about winning, but a whole lot of those guys, that's not true. They care about with Dansby, it is absolutely true. When he says he only cares about winning, this guy is all about the team and winning. I mean, just look at him. You know, when you say he's a winner, it's a cliche a lot of times, but look at this guy. They won the first national championship in Vanderbilt's history when he was there, and he was the MVP of the College World Series. He wins the World Series here, gets a huge home run in the World Series. They wouldn't have won it without him. I mean, he's a winner, man, and I think the Braves know that, and I think there's probably something going on behind back channels that are, you know, as far as trying to re-sign him, even though I have not heard it. I think that they'd be foolish not to unless they've got a plan B in place. They better not let him go unless they can bring in another really good shortstop.
Yeah, because this doesn't feel like his typical hot streak. Like, it just feels different, like every at-bat approach. And he's got like a Brandon Crawford trajectory where he didn't start super early, but around this age, you pick it up and then just be that consistent shortstop for your team.
That's actually a really good comp, because Brandon Crawford plays like that too.
Yep. Yeah, it is a good comp.
Yeah, he'd be one of the few high IQ guys I would pretty much put him in that category, him and like Anderton.
Well, yeah. And Austin Riley said, I mean, without even hesitation, he's the captain of the infield. He's the captain. I mean, when Freddie was here, you could have said there were both that Freddie was the captain, or there were, you know, it wasn't as clear cut, but Dansby is the captain of that infield right now. There's no doubt. And to go for, if you named a couple of co-captains on the team, he would certainly be one of them.
Yeah. I feel like him and Darno really stepped up there.
Yeah, they have, for sure.
All right, thanks, Marcus. We got to wrap.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Thanks, everybody. We appreciate it.
See you guys sometime soon.
755 is real.